This is Mark Gleason, Evangelism Communications Committee, March 23rd. And as part of the 150th anniversary interviews, I'm interviewing today Cora and Bob Schultz and talking to them about their longtime membership. First of all, Bob, can you tell me about your family members, your kids?
I can. And I think I'll have Cora jump on this one right away because she keeps track of this thing probably better than I do. So let's talk together about this.
Yeah.
Miriam.
Miriam is our oldest. She was born in 1968, the spring, when we moved here from University of Illinois. And then she is... Our second one is Maria, who was born in 1969, September. And then David, who was born in 72. And then we have twins that were born in 76. Those are our children. I don't know if you want to know more about them.
And where are they now?
Miriam and Maria and Carol, one of the twins, are in South Minneapolis. And Wendy is in Iowa City, and David is in Chico, California with his family.
When did you join St. John's, and why did you decide to join St. John's?
Well, in 1968, so actually the first year of teaching I did at St. Olaf, we went and looked at a few of the churches in town. I think mainly St. John's and Bethel. And then we decided we liked the liturgy and the people. And I found it sort of interesting, too, to have people there who will also be my colleagues at St. Olaf. So we attended a few services, and we knew more of the people at St. John's already because we had, having been at school. As a school that is at St. Olaf. Let's see.
What roles did you have in your membership years at St. John's?
Well, what is kind of strange, now this is my dealings with the place, is that in a way, I wanted to go to a church where the worshiping I would do would not be so demanding. This is really going to sound odd, because I had a lot to do at St. Olaf. And it was church, essentially, a lot of church music, since I directed the chapel choir and the Viking chorus and the cantorai visually. So you can understand that there was a strong pull for that community and to make it operate also as a worshiping community up at St. Olaf. So it was like this provided a variety, something different. Mm-hmm. And of course involved the rest of the family, whereas the St. Olaf thing didn't, even though it's where my focus was on the worship up at St. Olaf. That this would be more of a family experience, I think, at St. John's.
And Cora, your roles in music started early at St. John's, I believe.
Not so early. I think I followed Jeannie Narum. Is that right? As a choir director of the junior choir. And I did that then for 18 years.
And what size choirs did you have in the junior choir?
I think there were anywhere from a dozen to 15, 16, probably not more than that. Maybe that's even extravagant. I don't remember.
And do you remember how many years you conducted that choir?
18 years.
Mm-hmm. Bob, can you talk about people at church who were big influences on you? either, you know, as in your church life or personal life?
Again, it's hard for me to keep the St. Olaf and the St. John's thing separate. So ask me the question again, and I'll...
Yes. Were there members of St. John's who had an influence on you, either as in your St. John's life or otherwise?
Well, I got to know the musicians pretty well, I think. Mm-hmm. Like Cora for 18 years. And of course, I would be influenced by the Chris Johnsons, and Olaf was a member at St. John's. And our theory teacher, Winston Kessler, of course, was there and was a theory teacher too. And there are some of these people knew. Trying to think of anyone in particular besides Kessler and. Fred Schmidt actually was directing the mixed choir yet.
Was he really?
It must have been one of his last years that he did the choir.
And then Carolyn took over from him?
Yeah. And then, of course, there was Dan.
Oh, yeah, that's quite recent, yeah.
Yeah, so it's more recent.
Are there high points in the history of the church or your membership in the church that particularly stand out for you?
I should say no, and then she'd have to fill in something.
Well, when we talked about this morning, we talked about when our children were all baptized there.
Oh, that's true.
Except for Miriam. She was baptized in Illinois, but the rest of them were.
And what do you remember about the baptisms of the children? I suspect you had family heirloom materials involved there.
Well, we have a baptismal silver Revereware bowl that we used for the children to be baptized from. And we remember, we were always amused at Helena. Miriam's oldest child was baptized there at St. John's too, and Christine Carlson did the baptizing. And she was old enough that she, at some point, she grabbed the pastor's thumb and put it in her mouth, you know. It sort of stopped the service for just a bit.
She quit the that part of the liturgy until she got her, and told the congregation why. Yeah, you know, this child is sucking my thumb.
Yeah.
That would stop the service for, but also make it a very human thing.
Have you seen many changes in the physical nature of the church?
Well, by the time we got there, they had already done the sort of the revising the painting over the rose modeling.
Yeah, you know about that, don't you? Mm-hmm. Well, have you ever noticed the beams, those cross beams up in the sanctuary? Yes.
I have noticed that there is a faint image under there.
Old rose modeling. I don't know that it's, some people would say if it's, you know, masterworks, but I think it's kind of a shame that that piece of our heritage was covered up. I look forward to the time when somebody will say, we must show that, clean it up, expose it again. I have been a champion, personally, of our getting the original resurrection window out where people can see it. I wasn't here, as far as I know, when that, or else I was tending babies, mm-hmm. when that change was made. Do you know when that was? When they put the red window in?
In the 70s, I think. But
really?
I'm not yeah.
So we were here then.
Really? Yes, yeah, it was already in.
It was already in.
It was already in when we came in 68?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it was earlier than that. I see that as kind of a loss.
How about in terms of the worship service? Have you seen changes in that and noted trends that are meaningful?
Yes. I'm going to have you ask me the question again. My Parkinson's is sort of kicking in, which means I have trouble sometimes concentrating. Carry through.
What kinds of trends have you seen in worship at St. John's?
Okay, part of the reason we chose St. John's in the first place was because it was well done, beautiful, and meaningful use of the traditional worship services. And what's changed since then is that there's been the introduction of a lot of the newly published things, for instance, that are in the new hymn book. And so the new hymn book, and I shouldn't say just the new hymn book, because the green hymn book was introduced after we were here. So we were still using the tail end of the old traditional, meaning new traditional, meaning what was done in those 19, the turn of the century.
I don't know.
Yeah.
The red one?
Yeah, then there was a red one, right? And the green one.
That's what we have now.
No. No, the green one was the one that we've been using between the red one and the present one, the present red one.
Was that what we have red one now? You can scrap that one.
So, have you
and anyway, there's
seen an improvement in your opinion or a good evolution of music?
Yes, I think it's good.
Do you remember a time when there was some agitation for including more contemporary popular music ensembles with the drum sets and all that. And I think there was a pretty strong move toward not going that direction. Right?
So, yes.
You remember that?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. But
I'm comfortable with what we're doing now.
I think you. Well, I was going to say too about the progression of the development of the liturgy at St. John's. The movement went from sort of the very traditional Lutheran, or I would say the American gospel hymns, and that was really the basis for most of that hymn book. But it doesn't mean we used it that way anymore. That was the original. And then there was one that was a result of work at revising the old hymn book. And that was the red one, which sort of lost a lot of the Scandinavian traditional things. And some people were not happy about that, especially if you were a devotee of Efmelius's work, which was on that older hymn book. And some people felt that we should be singing mostly, I think, Scandinavian things or Scandinavian influenced or traditional American liturgical music. And then some attempt to have a good mixture. But the green one, we started getting a little more of the folk music, but not a lot. And I think now what we have after a course of worship supplements, trying to fill in places where I think a lot of people felt there was something lacking in what they would like to be singing and doing.
I like it that there are Hispanic tunes, African tunes, hymns that reflect other cultures that we wouldn't have thought of, 50, 60, 70, 80 years ago.
And that's where the liturgy was going. So by the time we have our present red hymn book, this is more world music interest. Just like in the rest of the total culture, but some people do it for one reason or another. One reason would be to attract the sort of the middle class children, also, and have things that you might use with children or with the average middle class people. But I don't...
Do you mean middle class or middle-aged children? What were you talking about?
Yeah.
You're talking about an age group?
Yes. Yes, age group, I think, mainly. Anyway, I got I spun off in a few different directions. Not necessarily clear. But anyway, we were talking about the whole liturgy. Mm-hmm. And there was, in the newest hymn book, there were about 13 different settings of music for the liturgy. And if you think back now, they're not being used very much. And what they're tending to use is what was in the green hymn book, like, for instance, especially in the last year or two. And before that, because Dan had the interest in the world music in this, and liked to experiment, there was a time when we tried out some of these new liturgies, most of which were a little hard for people to sing or to put together, unless you used one of them that was based on the more the type of music we had been using all along. But I think that the main new thing is the new interest in music of different cultures.
Do you have a favorite hymn or two?
Yeah, well... I think, of course, I was brought up Missouri Synod, Missouri Synod Lutheran. So there were a lot of the hymns I knew since the Missouri Synod was still continuing more at that time, continuing more of the old Lutheran 1951 hymn book, not 1941, I think, in the old Concordia. Oh, the interesting thing about that, too, is that Cliff Swanson and other people were on this joint committee that was deciding what the new liturgies and hymns and so on should be. And they had it all put together, and then that was the same time Missouri pulled out of this the joint Lutheran mm-hmm. business, and so they also pulled out of the participation in the new, what turned out to be the Green Hymn Book, where Swanson had been on the committee. And so it was the work that people like he would have, what should we say, a little more trouble with trying to keep things together since Missouri had pulled out. So there were various things trying to trail off, trying to refocus.
What are your hopes for the future in terms of direction for the church and building on the past?
I'm going to let Cora start on this one.
Mm-hmm. It's a big question.
Well, I like so much of what's going on. I don't know anything about, really about the Sunday school programs, but I presume that children are being well taught by people who care about them. I like the adult forums. We don't always get there, but I like the variety. I was really happy when they did that inclusive thing for gays and lesbians, and I didn't even think we have to be discussing it, but if we have to discuss it, I'm glad that it is inclusive now. I hear good things about the trips that the young people are taking and the mission trips, and it seems like a really lively, all-inclusive church. I like that the choir, you know, hears Cedarburg, what, with 50 consecutive years of being in the choir. I mean, it's a dedicated choir. We have wonderful music, wonderful music at St. John's. Oh, my gosh. Joanne Pauley and Eleanor Nemestow and young people. I'm so glad that the young people are being included in the service, and there people, it's not the same old ones every time, you know. It's not just a couple people who can sing. It's many people given an opportunity to perform and sing. And the youth choir seems to be building. And Carol Benson, of course, is a miracle worker with those little children, getting them to sing so nicely. So I'm really happy. And Nathan, he's just willing to try things, and, you know, he's always imagining what else might be going on, and really happy with the music at St. John's. Aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'd say ditto to everything you said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, the thing that's with the present crowd of, like, musicians, is that I know most of them, and if not all of them, but some I knew as students, and I knew what kind of training they had, like from Ferguson, that if you go into his class and sort of see and hear what's going on and participate in what's going on, then you see how that carries through into the kind of worshiping community St. John's is. So, of course, that's very, very satisfying and meaningful to me in my personal worship at St. John's. But it's also good that it's not elitist music, or, you know, this is the best of the hymns, and therefore we must sing these. particular, rather than this is what's meaningful to what the sermon is going to be, to what the assigned liturgical passages are. So that's great too. Makes me look forward to, but specifically, well, it's a little bit like someone asking you what, tell me about your children, and what do you think? What do you think they like? Again, I ran myself off into a corner.
I wanted to say one other thing about the youth choir business. We have 5 children, none of whom are churchgoers now, except David and his wife, Dara, who also have church jobs. So that's what takes them to church. Other than that, we might have 5, all of them, who don't attend church and are not part of a religious community. And this has been a point of some sadness on our part. But on the other hand, it doesn't mean that they are not spiritual people. They don't happen to have taken our route. But one thing I was always pleased about, as they were all in the church choir, the high school choir, well, and younger than that, is that they were constantly exposed to scripture and theology through the music. And what better way to reinforce those ideas and those beliefs, what better way to reinforce those than by constant repetition as you make the music beautiful? So I was always grateful for that and knew that no matter what, that would be a foundation for their later life, whether they choose to go and be members of a worshiping community or not. So I'm thankful to St. John's for that. The music was never trite. No, it was never a 7-syllable phrase that you repeat ad nauseum. But there was quality, well-crafted poetry and scripture and music. I'm grateful for that. I hope it never stops.
Well, thank you, Bob and Cora. You've given not only a great history of the church, but also many things that I think other people can follow up on in the future as they conduct research, including the physical space of the church and the music. Thank you again, and this concludes our interview.